Thank you, Pastor Roger, for leading us in our time together. Can you believe that the New Year has passed and the Chinese New Year has passed? And you can look at your neighbor and say, you show the effects of it. You can follow this message. There's an outline of it in the bulletin, and that may be helpful for you to be taking notes. We welcome everybody listening to this here and on the web. Firstly, then, unlikely lessons. A Sunday school teacher was teaching the class, her kids, and teaching them on what we just studied last week, Luke 15, the parable of the lost coin, the lost sheep, the lost coin, the lost son. And so the lost son, remember that one? Just from last week? The unfilial son, he got all his inheritance, and then he went out and squandered it on wild living, wine, women, and song. And then he came to his senses, he came back to his father, and the father welcomed him. And so the teachers ended the class by asking the children, who was most unhappy with the prodigal son's return? Who was most unhappy when the prodigal son returned? And so one child put up their hand and said, the elder son was most unhappy. Why? Because he lost everything. He lost out. But another child put up their hand and shouted, no, the most unhappy was the fattened calf because it lost its life. There's a danger to telling stories. There is an even greater danger to telling parables. And people, not just children, can draw very wrong lessons from it. Jesus, in this portion, tells us two of the most difficult parables, of the shrewd manager and of the rich man and Lazarus. They are hard to interpret and even harder to apply, both for the original listeners and for us here today. No preacher will dare claim that they have a definitive understanding of these two parables, especially of the first one, the shrewd manager. But my prayer, like every preacher and pastor through the last 2,000 years, is to give you a faithful explanation, as faithful as possible, from all the homework we've done, from all the reading, from all the meditation and living this out, what Jesus taught and what it means for us. So a very possible outline of this portion is this. It's about the shrewd manager. And there you have the unlikely commendation. And then it moves on to the respected Pharisees, because the first audience, he speaks to the disciples. And then in verse 14, the Pharisees are there. An unlikely condemnation of the religious teachers, the elite of Jewish society. And then with the rich man and Lazarus, there is unlikely reversal here. The common theme that I've drawn is unlikely, unlikely, unlikely. But the question or the issue being raised is a very important one. The question being raised that has implication for you and me is, what does Jesus command and what does Jesus condemn? Because once you believe that Jesus is God, you will really want to know what pleases him, what he commends, what kind of life, what kind of lifestyle, what kind of life goals, what kind of behaviors. And you want to know, and I would want to know, what is it that he condemns? So firstly then, lessons from the shrewd manager, unlikely commendation. And this is found as you read in the Bibles from verse 1 to verse 12. And so, a master discovers his manager. His manager, the direct translation could be his steward or his slave, wasting away his possessions. Have you ever found somebody doing that? Wasting away your possessions. And it could mean that this manager was either inefficient, incompetent. If you work in the financial sector, this person was underperforming. Or it could mean that this manager was plainly cheating. A dishonest manager, as is the language that is here. Then the master orders the manager to do two things. First, give an account of your stewardship. Give an account of your management. And secondly, he does a Donald Trump on him. You are fired. And then when sacked, very interestingly, this manager, did you notice, he makes no attempt to deny or to defend himself, to deny his alleged wrongdoing, his misappropriation or inefficiency, or to defend himself, a very unusual response. His reasoning ran along two lines at first. What would he do after this? He was too weak to do manual labor. How many among all the 500 here think you're too weak to do manual labor? All of us, lah. If you lost your job, you think you're ever going to be a farmer? Don't even know how to grow a plant, let alone a farmer. Manual labor. This was the agricultural world of 2,000 years ago. Second, from a Jewish context, he's too ashamed to beg. Because begging means you are on the wrong side of God. You are cursed by God. That led him to his third and his final option. And his third and his final option was, he would lower the debts of all who owed his master. And so, three possible meanings of this. Take a look at that. So, verse 5, he called in each of the master's debtors. He asked the first, how much do you owe my master? 800 gallons of olive oil, he replied. The manager told him, take your bill, sit down quickly, make it 400. Then he asked the second, how much do you owe? 1,000 bushels of wheat, he replied. He told him, take your bill and make it 800. So, three possibilities that's happening here. First one, he just undercut his boss. Secondly, he canceled the interest. And strictly speaking, between God's people, the Israelites, and later the Jews, they were not supposed to charge each other interest. And if he canceled the interest, this would now make his master fall in line with the law and at the same time give him this manager goodwill with the debtors. Or thirdly, the third possibility, he canceled his own commission in this. And in those days, it was not unusual to charge a commission for doing this work. We do not know. You can read 10 scholars, they'll give you 10 different views. And I tried to read 10 scholars. But there are the possibilities. What is known, what is clear, what is undeniable is that the amount between the olive oil and the wheat is substantial. 50% reduction from the olive oil. In the old days, you don't owe in money, you owe in practical terms for butter, right? Butter trade. So 50% of olive oil, 20% from wheat. And both bills came up to about 500 denarii. You know how much that is, I'm told by the scholars? That's about 2.5 to 3 years' wages. If you get retrenched, do you think your boss will pay you 2.5 to 3 years' wages? He's about to lose this. He's about to give this over, right? 2.5 to 3 years' wages, that's a lot. And the result of this is a very strange thing in verse 8. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. Now, read that with some care before we get ourselves in all sorts of knots because we didn't read it with some care and observation. The master did not commend the manager for his past dishonesty. If there was past dishonesty in being unscrupulous and cheating his master. He actually doesn't commend him for his past dishonesty, but he commends him for his present shrewdness. And so that's the point. And the second part of verse 8, Jesus then does a rare and almost unheard of thing. And what's the rare and unheard of thing? For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own than the people of the light. The rare and unheard of thing is that Jesus seldom holds up the people of this world as models for his own people to follow. God's people, and now among God's people, those who are listening to Jesus. So totally rare. And so you need to ask and unpack, what are the sons of this world known for? What are the people of this age, the word is literally this age, known for? What are we good for? Shrewdness, the word there, is not the word wisdom. Wisdom, the Greek word is Sophia, right? And the word here in the Greek is phronimos. And phronimos means clever to preserve yourself. Clever for self-preservation. You look up the modern meanings, I look up Webster's and Oxford and got it down to this 4 or 5. Astute, sharp, intelligent, perceptive, far-sighted. Most times when we hear the word shrewd, right, we think it has a negative meaning, but not so. Because in the original context, it has a positive slant to it. So the last thing there is highly important. clever to preserve self, far-sighted. Whatever we do not know about shrewdness, it carries this meaning. The world that we live in, whether in the first century or the 21st century, we are experts at future-proofing ourselves. Can agree or not? We are experts at present action for future benefits. We see a link. If I do this, then my future will be more secure. The sons of this age, the people of this world, we are very good at this. And so just take a look at the world around us. You just have to Google future-proofing. And that's all I did, future-proofing. And you find this. Katie Walker, future-proofing your child. Who on earth is Katie Walker? She's one of Australia's leading parenting and education experts, public speakers and authors. In 2012 and 2014, she was nominated Australian of the Year, and in 2014 was awarded the Order of Australia, the OAM, a very high thing. And this is a best-selling book, Future-Proofing Your Child. Then you just Google anything like future-proofing. Now, here, kindergartens in Singapore, how are they selling their childcare centres? Future-proof your child for a China future. At XXX Childcare, we believe that English and Chinese immersion are crucial to your child's future. You Google that and you're going to find future-proof your business for a China future, for an Asian-centric future, and all the big leaders of the world come. Because the big debate now is, has the centre of the world shifted from the West to the East? And then, of course, our great preoccupation with retirement. How many here are not concerned about retirement? Hands up. You are deluded. The last time I checked, every Singaporean is concerned about retirement because you got to future-proof your retirement. And this one I got from a bank website. Just in case you didn't know, we'll name you the bank lah. Right? You can check any bank. It's future-proofing. Can we all agree, my friends, from the first century to the 21st century, from young to old, future-proof your children, future-proof your business, future-proof your retirement. The people of this age know the link between present action and future benefits. This is what the sons of light, the people of the kingdom, have to learn from them. And so Jesus' application, he moves on. Verse 9, I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when worldly wealth is gone, you will be welcome into eternal dwellings. And so the application of this is, sons of light, pick up this main characteristic of this world, very good at future-proofing ourselves, and then just use this. Use your, literally, your unrighteous wealth, wealth that you earn from this world, which is fallen, to win friends for eternity. So use earthly wealth for eternal blessings. If that is true, my friends, as a valid interpretation of this, as a faithful interpretation of this, then if Luke 15 is Jesus' lost and found mission, when the Pharisees and the religious teachers grumble, saying, why is he hanging around the wrong people all the time? Tax collectors and sinners, always eating with them, lunch with them, dinner with them, supper with them. And Jesus basically tells them, I've been sent by God on a lost and found mission because God has a bursting heart to save sinners. And here is, in Luke 16, a now and forever methodology. Yes, I'm on a mission, but there's a methodology once you become a believer in Jesus. Once you become a disciple, you act now for forever blessings. That is shrewdness. That is stewardship. You embark on present action for future benefits. And could it be possible, because 15 and 16 side by side, was this a reference to the tax collectors and the sinners? Because whatever we do not know about the tax collectors and sinners, they were the first responder or the main responders to Jesus. Who were the last responders to Jesus? The religious elite of Israel. And so the tax collectors and sinners, they were the only ones taking Jesus' offer to dine with him, to listen intently to his words. If there was anything Pharisees can learn from tax collectors and sinners, is this. At least the tax collectors and sinners, this rabbi from small town, I think he's from God, no? And if he's from God, right, then he has something to do with the future, you know. then we better hang around and listen to him a little bit more. And so they were changing their minds about Jesus, about God, about their present life, about their future destiny. In that sense, tax collectors and sinners, they may have unrighteous beginnings from unrighteous wealth, but because of a right response to Jesus, they would have righteous and eternal endings. And notice where Jesus takes this in terms of application, verse 10. Whoever can be trusted with very little can be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest with very little will be dishonest with much. So if you have been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? So Jesus moves from shrewdness to stewardship, making the most of our worldly wealth as the principle of faithfulness. Faithful with little, faithful with much. Faithful with unrighteous wealth, faithful with eternal riches. Can you see where he's going? If that's the case, my friends, then the questions here are this. How do we practice Jesus' commendation of shrewdness? How do we practice Jesus' commendation of stewardship? How do we personally and collectively take part in future-proofing ourselves as we move from earthly blessings to eternal blessings, as we move from faithfulness with little to faithfulness to much? And I suggest to you two ways, either circles or steps. Firstly, mind your circles. To draw somebody into the kingdom of God, you firstly have to be interacting with people in the community out there. The places that tomorrow your children go to schools, the ITEs and the polys and the universities, the workplaces, our neighborhood. And so vitally important that we do this. By God's grace, right, we have the opportunity still in Singapore to be ministering to the community in a formal way, approved by the authorities, because we still can do Boys Brigade and Girls Brigade. And Boys Brigade and Girls Brigade, I'm told the total numbers in all our 100 over companies around is maybe 4,000 to 5,000 Boys Brigade, maybe 3,000 in the Girls Brigade. It has shrunk, but it's still a platform. The fact that you and I are worshiping here as we become an anchor partner to Kuo Chuan Presbyterian Secondary School, that's interacting with our community. And 2 years ago, you remember, we had Let's Carnival, and about 4,000 or 5,000 people came. Remember about 10 years ago, we came to worship here at the secondary school. And when we came to worship here, because there are already two other churches here, and on a Sunday, the most neighborly thing that we did was to take up the car park of the residents. That's how they knew we were here. So you ask, what's our witness to the neighborhood? We took up their car park for 3 years. So when we moved here, by God's grace, we thought of something called Let's Carnival. Because we are now a neighborhood church, you got to keep asking, what neighborly witness and what neighborly things can you do in partnership with the school, with the teachers and the principal, to send a message that we are here to bless you, we are here to bless you for God. And so vitally important that we continue to do these things. You know how many people came for Let's Carnival? 4,000 or 5,000 people came. And it slowly but surely will reverse the messaging. That we are not just here to take away your car parks, we are here to bless you. And so many people walk away. Step two is when we invite people to come to some of the things. You know, how many people in ERPC, their first step into ERPC is either they were a captive audience. You know how you make people captive audience? Either at two things, wedding or funeral. When you invite your friend to come to a wedding, most of them say they are not Christians. You're getting married in church. What to do? Have to come along. Or you're getting married in a hotel, but you still invite Pastor Chris and Pastor John to come and preach. I have to listen. Captive audience for 20 minutes. captive audience for 45 minutes in that solemnization. You know, how many people said, you know, Pastor Chris, you may not know, but I first came to church because I first heard you at the wedding sermon. And funerals, sure, captive audience one, right? You have to come, right? And whether you like to hear it or not, you're going to hear about Jesus dying for your sin, Jesus rising from the dead, and Jesus coming again, and all who put their trust in Him. We do not moan and groan and like the world does without hope, but we mourn as people with hope. Amen? What do you call that? So please keep bringing friends to weddings and funerals. You cannot bring friends, they will come by themselves. And then the things that we organize from the newcomers' meal. If you read last week, right, we had our new member services. You read the testimonies? How many of them would say in their testimonies, the thing that changed their mind, they've been visiting ARPC at Bishan for a few weeks, like the sermons, like the people, but what changed their mind was coming to the newcomers' meal and then meeting the elders, meeting the deacons, meeting our staff, and just knowing us personally, seeing where I live, seeing how untidy my place is, seeing how, then I say, oh, this man is for real. Then they join the church. How many of them says, what turned my mind was going to the pastor's house. You know, somebody came from a bigger setting, a mega church, and said, I've decided to join you because in a mega church, I think it'll be many years before I actually get invited to the senior pastor's house. Because there, it's a performance. We are not an institution. We are not an organization. We are the family of God. The newcomer's meal at someone's home, not a cold room, sends the message, we are family. It's minding our circles, bringing in people from community. And then so many of our AOPC people think inviting their friends not simply to the newcomers' meal, but to discovering Christianity, to just for newcomers. And just the last 2 weeks, I shared the gospel with a man from a Malay background. And he gave his life to Christ. And who is accompanying him to come to Just for Newcomers? His friend. When you come to Just for Newcomers, you have to free up 14 Sunday afternoons. What could you do on a Sunday afternoon? I do not know about you, but man, I need my beauty sleep, man. 14 weeks of no beauty sleep, that's the end of me. I mean, I'm speaking on behalf of you, lah. There's so many things you could do on a Sunday afternoon, watch a movie, etc. But to accompany my friend, this is future-proofing. Mind your steps. You take them in from the community. You take them in from the schools. You take them in from Boys Brigade. You journey with them, right? And then the special things, the Easter celebrations, where 2 years ago, our basic put up a musical. Then our Christmas, where you will have, what's his name? Pastor Edmund Fong. Pastor Edmund Fong as Michael Jackson, right? And Pastor Jeff. And then that's the captive audience. And then when we have our MPRs, we ask, you 2 weeks' time, you got marriage preparation retreat. Nah? My friend, not Christian, can come or not? Can. Nah. We'll make space. Because better you hear about the Bible's idea of marriage and family than you get the world's idea of marriage and family. Better you hear God's idea of sex and money and in-laws and outlaws, I mean in-laws, right? Then you hear the world's idea of sex and money and work and careers and parenting and in-laws and outlaws. So even the MPR is a bridge that we can lay. And then last year we had the Ravi Zacharias International Ministries teaching. Then every month we have culinary arts. You know the number of people who come? Because people, we like desserts. You must always win people by their stomachs. Why do you think Jesus taught us this? He feasted people into the kingdom. You know that? Almost every chapter, he's dining again. What kind of Messiah is this? He basically dined people into the kingdom. And the last thing he did with the disciples was one last Passover meal where he was betrayed. And then you lead them to the center. Christ is at the center. And then you disciple them. What I'm showing you here, you can read in any missiological textbook, in any evangelism textbook. Nobody ever comes to know Christ. One big step. There are many small steps on the stairway to heaven. So you either mind your circles or you mind your steps. And you always have to be thinking, how do I get them to step one? How do I get them to step two? How do I get them to step three? How do I get them finally to give their life to Jesus? So I want to say to you, nothing happens in terms of salvation. Nothing happens in terms of sanctification, growing in holiness, apart from prayer. So set aside time to pray. And when you set aside time to pray, you will set aside time for 3 M's. You set aside time for meetings with people. You set aside time for ministry with people, not simply to meet them, but to minister to them. And you set apart money for those ministries. And you can do that personally, and we can do that collectively. So let's go for this. Set aside time, intentional meetings. Let me begin with us and our children. Do you know you raise your children? So I've got two. Me spending time with my 2 children is like, it's good, it's wonderful, right? And hopefully it's the same behavior. But I also have, over the last 20 over years, made every week an intentional time to spend with my son. I go for one-to-one outing with him. And then intentional time with my daughter. And that special one-to-one time, that's, I pray about it, there's a meeting, and to know what my son is going through in different seasons, to hear his heartbeat, and when he speaks, don't say when your child says, you should, cut out the should language. You listen, say, and if your child says, I'm struggling with this fear, this person is bullying me on the internet, etc., say, you should be like me, just bash him. What you must say? Oh yeah, once I was also bullied. Actually, my whole life I was bullied. Please don't forget that once you were young, you know, once you were a bundle of fears, once you were young and you woke up with nightmares, so when your child wakes up and says, why you got nightmare? You are Christian, no nightmare. I mean, it's the shoot, right? I mean, we know we have to move people from fear to faith, but it's a long journey. There are many steps from fear of this world, fear of this life, to faith in Jesus, rescuing you from all fears. And so we need to mind your circles, mind your steps. And unless you put it in your diaries that I'm going to meet my son, I'm going to meet firstly my wife, my husband, intentional dating once a week, and eyeball them and ask Mona, how are you, Mona? Not ask her, have you done this? Have you done that? Don't ask the have you done, no. It's how are you? I want to try. If you're sitting with husband and wife, just turn to them, eyeball them. How are you? Your wife would have fainted. You finally ask how I am after 10 years? Instead of what have you done, what have you not done? Intentional meetings, intentional ministry, intentional money. You set aside money for this. And sometimes we have a bookends in the canteen. And why do you think we do the bookends here? Because the people, nothing to do, they like to set up bookshop, right? Do you ever set a budget once a year that I'm going to set aside $1,000 to buy books for my family and friends? For every person who comes and see me in my office, I will always give a book. And this man who came to see me from this different religious background, he said, my friend recommended this book to read, The Case for Christ. Do you have it? I have it. I look, my bookshelf gone. Must be my pastor stole it. So I quickly go outside and ask Pastor Sankun, who is in charge, God, Case for Christ or not? Always have books and resources. Always have links on the internet to point people to. They want to read the Bible. They want to understand Christianity. And so mind your circles, mind your steps. Making appointments with people, taking time out to minister to them, giving 2 hours to a person, giving 2 hours, it takes time, it takes effort. My friends, it does. So last week I shared about a dog that walked into church, right? A stray dog. So what do you call that dog? Christian lah. You won't believe what happened last week. So that dog that walked in, I shared in the sermon, that dog walked in about 3 weeks ago. Last week after I preached here, I went back, another dog walked into church. I'm not kidding. This is the proof. This is the photo. The last one was a large poodle. This is a small poodle. And so my daughter saw it, and then they cap it, etc. And so what do we do? So I know some people here love dogs. I found a couple who kindly said, I've got two dogs, I can't take it. I rang the SPCA. SPCA said, can you just keep it for a while? And even you brought it in, we can't test the microchip because the office is not open, so you won't be able to find the owner. So I found a couple here. They kindly took the dog for the night. Right. Then we left our number there. If the owner ever calls SPCA, SPCA can call us. The owner called SPCA. Right? And so we connected the dog to the owner. And the owner sent me this message. Okay? Let me see whether I can find it. Okay. I told her I was a pastor. Okay? So, morning, Pastor Chris. Thank you so much for saving my dog. The dog's name is called Whiskey. Thank you for saving Whiskey. That's a possible name. Yeah? Right. Whiskey, gin. We like to do a small donation to your church. Can you advise how we are to go about it? What's the lesson? Always save dog. Offering goes up next week. Here's my reply. Good morning. So happy Whiskey is back safely with you. Thank you so much for your kind offer, but there is no need. We would be most happy to meet you and for us to visit our Sunday service. Please visit our website, ARPC. What do you call that? A personal doggy appointment. A personal divine appointment. When you and I go about life not prayerful, everything in life is just random. But when you hear Jesus and you listen to his mission, he's out on a search and rescue mission sent by God because of the fatherly love of God. Then you listen to his methodology. It's all about what? It's all about now and forever. What you do now has future consequences. Then we mustn't go about our days randomly, coincidentally. We pray about all things, my friends. And so, how do we turn our earthly blessings into eternal blessings? And so somebody that we know for all these years invited us to her 50th birthday. And so we went, Mona and I went, and we had a good time. And she wrote me this note. Thank you for being part of my birthday celebration. And I meant it when I said that my encounters with you and Mona have always left me encouraged and spurred me on in the Lord. And we don't meet her very much in all the 30 years since, right? And thank you for your ministry to the Lord. I always give thanks each time. I hear about how God is using you for his kingdom purposes. So proud of you. I look back at the early years, amazed too. She's from Prinsep Street. When I first met her in 1984-85, I first came to Prinsep Street, our founding church. And then when we went to Bible college, in the final 2 years of Bible college, Mona and I were really poor. And we wrote to people who would help support us. And she was the first one. And so she writes, when I look back on the early years, my first ever banking transaction to send Australian dollars to you and Mona, I was blurred then how to send money to Australia. And wondered whether the small amounts would make a difference, but God knew better. Not simply to save you from anorexia, Chris, but see how God has used you. May you continue to walk in the power of his sustaining grace. Here's an example of a sister in Christ who turned her earthly blessings into eternal blessings. And when she heard that we were in need in Bible College, that's all she did. She didn't know how to do a TT at the time, a telegraphic transfer, but she learned it. But now, she supports many people. You getting the message? You know I'm laboring this. I am laboring this. Because Jesus does not teach us without any challenge to our lives. And so, my friends, the methodology is use what we have now for forever blessings. Did you notice that from verse 13 onwards, the Pharisees, verse 13, no servant can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one, love the other. Or he'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. The Pharisees who love money heard this and were sneering at Jesus. He said to them, You are the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of men, but God knows your heart. What is highly valued among men is detestable in God's sight. Did you notice there's a switch between the first 12 verses and now from verse 13 onwards to verse 18 or thereabouts? The switch is from commendation to condemnation. And he begins with choose between devotions. Devotions to two masters. Choose between serving God and mammon or God and money. And then immediately, bang, the connection is made. The Pharisees, who do you think wrote that? My Bible has red letters, no? It doesn't say Jesus said that. It must be Luke. The Pharisees who love money heard this and sneered at him. Literally, they tipped their noses, did the English thing, they looked down on him. And so, who was Jesus condemning? He was condemning the most unlikely people to condemn in Israel. The Pharisees, the religious teachers. And what was he condemning? He was basically condemning their hypocrisy. And why their hypocrisy? Because on the surface, on the face of it, they love the law. If you love the law, you love God. If you love God, you love neighbor. That's how they look. But underneath the surface, in their hearts, according to Jesus, they love money, they love human applause, they love their rank, they love recognition, they love self. And if you love self, it's mutually exclusive. You hate God. This is the diagnosis of Jesus of the Pharisees. God knows your hearts. People around you and me may not know our hearts. And so, friends, tremendous warning. But the accusation against Jesus, you know, Jesus, he's always had something to say against the Pharisees. Pharisees, number one teacher of the law. If he has always something to say against the Pharisees, he must be anti-Pharisee. Anti-Pharisee means anti-law. Anti-law means he's anti-God law. So on the surface, he looks like he's anti-law and anti-God. But in substance, you couldn't get somebody more serious about the law. And that's why he speaks about the law and the prophets were proclaimed until John. And Jesus says, you know, I have come, the same line of revelation, the law and the prophets, John the most blessed among men, because he was the last of the prophets and the first to announce the Messiah. He lived between two ages. And he was privileged to be the forerunner and the announcer, the introducer to Jesus the Messiah. And whatever you do not know about the constant stream between the law, the prophets, John and me, we uphold the law. You guys take this lightly, you take divorce lightly, but I say to you, not a letter of the law will pass away. And that is the lesson of Jesus. At face value, looks like he hated God. Because he was anti-Pharisee, anti-law, but at heart, he loved God and he upheld the law. If that is a true interpretation of this, my friends, his condemnation is against hypocrisy. The most unlikely people who to be called hypocrites in the nation of God. Then the lesson that we can draw, the application, is very serious. You look the part, but don't live the part. I shared this, but you know, because our memories are so short, right? You won't remember him. He's a Catholic priest. They have just concluded, right, the investigation of sexual abuses in the Catholic Church in Australia itself, and they found 4,400 cases. He was one of the worst. But you look at him, Holy Father. The title, just look at that. That meek face, almost holier than me and all the pastoral team put together. Can we say that? Don't get used to looking the part, but not living the part. You know, from last year, there was a UK scandal in the football clubs, a sexual abuse scandal. It began in mid-November when a few former professional soccer players came out and publicly talked about being sexually abused by who? By their football coaches from the 1970s to the 1990s. By the time the investigation concluded, they found 526 potential victims from 184 identified suspects. Imagine, every week you just send your innocent son or innocent daughter to a sports thing to be coached by the sports, and sometimes they stay overnight because this coach, you know, the training goes overnight. And all this time that you send your child to be developed in their talent, in their sport, they have been sexually molested. What does Jesus command and what does Jesus condemn? Jesus commands shrewd stewardship that secures our future. And he condemns present hypocrisy as seen in the religious teachers that jeopardizes their future. And they think that they can carry on with this two-timing. On the surface, we love God, and at heart, we love self. They think they could carry this without repercussions, without consequences with God for eternity. Friends, if you've taken down nothing, take this down. That's vitally important to take note. He commends shrewd stewardship. And shrewd stewardship is, it secures our future. You mind your circles, you mind your steps. No day is ever lived without prayerful intentionality to save people and to minister to people. But we have to be warned about hypocrisy that jeopardizes our future. With that, you can now understand the rich man and Lazarus. There was a rich man who was dressed in purple, fine linen, and lived in luxury every day. At his gate was laid a beggar named Lazarus, covered with sores, longing to eat what fell from the rich man's table. Even the dogs came and licked him. And so what do you see here, my friends? Jesus tells a parable of the end. And the end is an unlikely reversal. People that we think who are blessed in this world are actually cursed and separated from God forever in Hades. People who we think are cursed in this world, like Lazarus, will be blessed forever in the kingdom of heaven. You couldn't get a greater contrast, right? The rich man, he's dressed in purple. You know this purple, I'm told? Purple clothes made from dye. And this dye is derived from snails, extremely expensive. And then Lazarus, what's he clothed with? Lazarus, he's clothed with sores. And the rich man's food, he ate luxurious food every day, you know? He lived in luxury every day. Some of us can say, we live in luxury once a year when we go on holiday for 7 days. But this man lived in luxury every day. And what was the food of Lazarus? If the rich man remembered to drop some crumbs for him, that would be it. And friends, never mistake this. Don't confuse our temporary status for our permanent status in heaven. And who we think is blessed may not be blessed. Who we think is cursed may not be cursed. And once it happens, friends, there is no turning back. And so, vitally important that we take heed here. And so, my wife was telling me yesterday, you know, after she taught us children about this, and the children listen intently, right? Then Adam Road, here in Bishan and all around the world, and one of the kids, she just blurted out, you know, one of our children's church kids, saying, we are quite rich, no? Will we go to heaven? She just asked straight out, no, the innocence of a child, we are quite rich, no? Will we go to heaven? Don't you think that's a good question? The wrong understanding of application of this is that the rich go to hell, the poor go to heaven. The right understanding and application is this: you may be rich, but stingy towards God and others. And if you are rich and stingy towards God and others, as in the rich man here, then in all likelihood you're staring at separation from God forever, who is the ultimate big-hearted person. But if you are poor, but rich towards God and the things of God and the people of God, then you are looking at eternity with God forever. And so, what we do on earth has eternal consequences. According to Jesus, you believe that? Today, what you do today affects tomorrow. How many of us here are doing things, thinking thoughts, speaking words, doing things which you think will not affect eternity with God. Think again. So what's in a photo? What's in a tissue? A very strange, boring photo, you know? So we celebrated our 30th anniversary. A group of people kindly bought us a hotel staycation at Sentosa. Then our children came and spent the morning with us. And we walked at the beach at Sentosa, right? So after walking on the beach, my daughter, was dusting off her feet, all the sand. And as she was dusting off the sand off her feet before she put on her shoes, the cleaner there rushed up to her and gave her that tissue. And so it's a tissue she never wants to forget. The cleaner looked a little bit like this. Perhaps he had a stroke. And if you saw him, you wouldn't give him a second look. He was an old man, and his face was a little bit disjointed, etc. And I told me, take a picture. Take a picture. This is a picture worth keeping and writing an article about. Because this man may look poor, but he's rich towards others. Even me as a father, right, as I saw my daughter dusting off, I didn't lend her a hand. I mean, it's just sand on her feet. But this old man saw her do that and pick up a brand new tissue and came and gave it to her. Xiao Mei Mei, Kenny. What will stop you from recognizing that you are in need of help? That you and I are possibly living with hypocrisy? Is hypocrisy jeopardizing your future with God? It will be your pride. And the reversal of fortunes as told in this rich man and Lazarus is, please, don't assume your salvation. Make sure. And once you realize you are living this double life, once you realize you are rich and stingy towards God and others, then you need to do something about it now. Even as I end this sermon. Because you do not know whether you have tomorrow. You do it now, and I do it now. Who does Jesus commend, and who does he condemn? Very important. Will he commend you? Will he condemn you? We need to listen carefully. Let's stand and pray together and sing our closing song.